From SDPB Radio, I'm Josh Heyer, and you're listening to the In the Moment News Podcast. Each week, In the Moment with Lori Walsh brings you news and arts coverage from across the state. Listen live at 11 a.m. Central, 10 Mountain on SDPB Radio, or tell your smart speaker, play SDPB. You can find every In the Moment segment at listen.sdpb.org or subscribe to the In the Moment Segments Podcast. And now, it's your weekly roundup in news coverage. This week on In the Moments podcast, we continue to meet candidates hoping to represent districts across South Dakota. Republican Mark Willardson is seeking his fourth consecutive term in the South Dakota House of Representatives. He's been on the Commerce and Energy Committee and has chaired the House Tax Committee. If elected, he would represent District 11, which is in Minnehaha County.
Mark Willardson, welcome to In the Moment. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
So to get us started, tell us a bit about District 11 and the key issues for this district that you serve.
Okay, well, District 11 is one of the smaller geographical areas in the state. It's bordered on by Marion Road on the east and Highway 17 on the west, 57th Street on the south, and 12th Street on the north. That's pretty basic, but that's pretty much the boundaries for the district. As you might expect, we're a pretty conservative district in Sioux Falls. They do a lot of issues in terms of Second Amendment, the states getting together, you know, for a convention and such.
Tell us some of the things that you're proudest of that you've accomplished already in the state house since, if elected this time around, it would be your fourth consecutive term.
Okay, well, I've been an insurance agent most all of my adult life. So that's kind of why it's important that I serve on the Commerce and Energy Committee. Currently, my full-time occupation is with Core Insurance in Vermilion, where I'm the agency manager for that. So I deal a lot with insurance issues and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. So we're looking forward to working again with the Commerce and Energy Committee, hopefully if I get reelected, and can continue our work on the Commerce and Energy Committee with that.
Mm-hmm. What are some things that you would hope to accomplish in Commerce and Energy? What's some of the work that you want to continue?
Well, at this point, it's very early, so mm-hmm. there's some things that are going around. One in particular, deals with employers' liability in terms of the COVID-19 part of it. There's a couple of adjustments that the state has already made in that area, and so I don't know, if there'll be anything that we need to take up on the Commerce Committee or not, mm-hmm. But it would be things like that.
Mm-hmm. I have up here from this last legislative session some bills that you were a part of, and I'm looking at a few of the bills that you signed on as a co-sponsor, and one that caught my attention was Senate Bill 64, which would have prohibited capital punishment for any person suffering a severe mental illness. Now, I know that bill didn't make it out of Senate committee this year, but I'm curious, what about that bill attracted you, made you want to sign on as a co-sponsor, and do you see that issue potentially returning this year?
Okay. I think that was the second time that bill had come around. I think it had come around 2 years ago as well. Capital punishment is a pretty serious event that takes place. My interest in that part is just to make sure that as a state that we do it correctly. I don't know if there's a worse thing that could happen than, you know, having someone go through the system who's actually innocent and goes through that process. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, my interest in it is just to make sure that that we do that correctly and make sure that we don't make mistakes.
Right. I also know you were a prime sponsor of a bill that would have lowered the total amount of tax credits that may be claimed on annual premium tax returns. Talk to us about the lifespan of that bill and why that was an important issue to you this past legislative session.
Well, thank you for the question. There again, that issue has been before the legislature, I think, since 2015, when another senator from Sioux Falls brought that forward. What the tax credit is for is it's for insurance companies that make a donation to a private endowment fund for scholarships for kids around the state. Now, while that in and of itself, may be a good thing, I'm not sure that we should take money out of the state general fund and give it to insurance companies for doing their civic duty. Hmm. I think these insurance companies should have a sense of duty to, you know, make donations to not only to, scholarship funds, but also, you know, for other things around the state. And I think for the most part that, companies in South Dakota do that. And so I'm not trying to belittle them at all for that. I just don't think that, we should take money out of the state's general fund where, you know, it could go to education. That's, you know, one of the biggest things that we fund in the legislature. But I don't think that they should, you know, get a credit that we should give them money out of the general fund for that. Hmm. Obviously, I was in the minority because my ideas for doing that for the last 2 years have failed. So I wouldn't. It'd take a lot of persuasion to get me to bring that bill again this year.
Hmm. Interesting. My guest has been Mark Willardson. He's running to represent District 11 as a Republican in the State House. This would be his fourth consecutive term if elected again as part of our Meet the Candidate series. Mark Willardson, thanks for taking the time with us today. Much appreciated.
Well, thanks again for having me.
Mike Huber says that less than 15% of the South Dakota legislature are Democrats. He believes that without a strong opposition party, South Dakota has a lack of transparency and lags behind in efficient and effective government. This fall, he is seeking your vote to represent District 14, which is in Minnehaha County.
Mike Huber, welcome to In the Moment.
Hi, Jackie. Thanks for having me.
Certainly. So tell us why, Mike. Why are you running for House of Representatives this year? What do you hope to accomplish?
Hi. One of the main things is citizen involvement. As you mentioned in my reasons for getting involved in the lack of representation of the minority party. We are 30% of the registered voters are actually Democrat, and we only have 15% represent, or less than 15% representation at the state level. And I just don't see that a lot of involvement from citizens, and I think part of that is because of apathy, that people don't feel like the legislative branch is responsive to their needs, and would like to see more involvement from their legislators, more connection, more communication back and forth.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about who you are outside of this campaign for House. What do you do?
I'm a financial advisor, so I help people with their financial planning, doing their retirement planning, planning for education needs for their children, and I also have been I'm quite a volunteer in my times. I started a yoga for prisoners program up at the South Dakota Penitentiary, and we're not doing that now because of the COVID problem, pandemic. And I also volunteer up there for the Lakota and Nakota spiritual conference, which also is another thing that's on hold. And then I've been involved in the community with a church for a long, long time. I've moved in and out of South Dakota and been back for the last 4 years.
Mike, you're running to represent District 14, which, as we mentioned, includes parts of Minnehaha County. Tell us, if you would, a bit about your district and the key issues that you see rising in District 14.
Sure. Yeah, so District 14 is bordered on the south by 57th Street, goes out to Highway 11, and then all the way comes back in on 41st Street and then into like Southeastern and up to Cliff and then back on Cliff to 57th Street. So it really does have a wide spectrum of individuals and families here. Mostly it is families that are raising children. So education is, I think, one of the primary things that I hear from people about, that they want to see the legislature continue the commitment that we've made to teachers for pay raises and funding education to do the best for our kids in the public schools. And now with the COVID virus, sick leave is also an issue that I hear a lot about, and medical issues that people are having. They're not able to work, and so their medical issues continue, and they would like to have some kind of coverage in those areas.
Hmm. Kind of related to that point, if elected this fall, what are some of the key issues or even perhaps a bill that you would plan to pursue in the State House?
Well, one would be a sick leave type of a policy so that that people are covered when they are sick, that their employers are going to help them when they're not able to work. Another issue that really concerns me, one that was proposed before the House that I went and sat in on the committee meeting up in Pierre, and that was online voter registration, a very simple type of law, it would seem like, to get through, but it was stopped in committee, and I've talked to many legislators, and they've said if that would have made it to the House, would have easily passed. And this is an example to me of where we don't somehow get things through that need to be gotten through. The Secretary of State was proposing this law, and the Secretary of State from 15 years ago was in attendance to ask that this get passed. He said he proposed this law 15 years ago, that we would just have online voter registration. This has nothing to do with voting online, but just registering online. And the Secretary of State wants this law passed, and the committee put it into the final days of the legislative vote, so it didn't even get voted on.
Is this your first time running for public office?
Yes, this would be my first time. And that's another aspect that I want to kind of teach people of the process I'm going through of getting in, and that I'd like to just see more and more people. There were only two Democrats, myself and Aaron Healy, that went into the primary. So there was no primary for us. And on the Republican side, there were three. And I feel like we should have 10 for every position. It's not as difficult as people think.
Hmm. What are some things you would like to see as far as maybe that outreach or that educational push to encourage further citizen involvement in our legislative process?
Well, I think one of the main things is just communication on behalf of the legislators. I've never, besides Aaron Healy, who I do know personally, I think that she communicates extremely well, but the other legislators that are in my district, I had never heard anything from them, and I never have met them. And I want to make sure that I'm out talking to people and communicating with them via email or roundtables, caucuses, so that they understand what's going on and how important the issues of local are, more so than what the national issues that get the most attention on.
Mm-hmm. As we're winding down, talk to us about, I suppose, maybe the moment that you made the decision, this is the time, this is what I feel passionate about, I'm going to run for office. What made that choice for you?
You know, I think it was that situation while I was sitting at the legislative branch in Pierre. My wife was volunteering as the doctor of the day at the legislative that day. So I went up there with her. And just looking down and seeing six Democrats over on the Senate side and less than a handful over in the legislative side. And just when you look down on that and see how we don't listen, we don't hear from another side. There's no challenge to the other side. And in this case I talked about where it was such a simple bill to be passed. The people from disabilities were asking for this bill to be passed to help with voter online registration. The past Secretary of State, the current Secretary of State, and even there were other representatives up there for the census were asking for this, and it was just ignored.
My guest has been Mike Huber, running for State House of Representatives in District 14, joining us for Meet the Candidates. Mike Huber, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Al Lieber is a retired superintendent and longtime administrator. He's hoping to focus on educational issues at the state capitol in Pierre. Lieber is a Democrat candidate for the South Dakota House of Representatives in District 17 and calls Vermilion home.
Al Lieber, welcome to In the Moment. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for the chance to speak to the constituents at this time.
So, Al, tell us why you've decided to run for office.
Interesting question. For many years as a superintendent, I went to Pierre once a year to lobby for education issues. And then when I was superintendent at Dakota Valley, I was on their business council for 17 years. And the business council every year was good enough to have personal interviews with the governor, with Department of Labor, with economic development, transportation, et cetera, and we had personal meetings with those people, and I really got interested in the way the government worked, and I really felt that it was something that I would like to do once I retired. So that kind of sparked my interest. And the other reason is there's a lot of different people from different backgrounds in the legislature. There are some retired teachers, but there really are not a lot of educators in the legislature. And I really felt for a long time that we needed more of a voice in what goes on in the legislature in regards to education.
Tell us maybe in the realm of education, some of the key issues that you would like to pursue in the State House if elected.
Well, number one is going to be increased salaries for teachers. You know, as much as they've done, they're trying to bring up the salary. We're still at, I think, 47th, maybe 46th. I haven't seen the latest polls. but it's still not enough. And we know that we have a lot of good teachers in South Dakota, but we could also have better teachers in South Dakota. We have a lot of people who do leave the state and go other places simply because they look at the dollar. And I know that many officials will say, yeah, but you have low taxes. You know, you don't have a state income tax, et cetera, et cetera. But you know what? The property tax is higher than most states. So it kind of balances out. But when you're first coming out looking for a job, you don't take, teachers don't take that into consideration. I think a lot of young people don't take that into consideration. They look at the job market out there, and if they can find a job in Minnesota that pays $5,000 more, or Nebraska or Iowa, particularly in this area of the state, that pays $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 more, then they're going to jump. In my own experience at Dakota Valley, we averaged about 14 new teachers a year. And the reason for that is we would hire the young teachers. We would get them for 4 or 5 years. And then all of a sudden, after 4 or 5 years, the disparity between salaries between South Sioux City and Sioux City became $7,000 to $10,000 difference in pay. When we first hired them, it may have only been $2,000. But because their pay structure accelerated faster than ours did, we would lose them after 4 or 5 years. And we were constantly hiring new staff and training those staff. So that's the biggest, that's my number one issue. The other issue is South Dakota has been fighting early childhood education for a long time. And I don't know if that fight can be won right away, but I still think we need to look stronger at that. There's even been a failure on the legislature to even appoint a commission to study the effects of early childhood. So we do need a four-year-old program in the state, possibly even down to three-year-old at some point in time, not right away. I've heard stories from some legislators when we talk to them about it that, well, it'll ruin the daycares. That's kind of not a very good excuse, I don't think, to prevent these four-year-olds from having some education. So anyhow, those are the two big issues right now. Kind of minor on my list, there's the local control issue. It seems to me sometimes the legislature will rush to judgment and pass a law that affects everybody, or maybe there was only one or two schools that were being that had a problem. And so I think I would like to be able to be a voice of reason saying, look, if there's a problem with one or two schools, fix that problem and don't put laws in that affects 151 schools, school districts.
That's interesting. So, do you have an example of maybe an instance where that was the case?
Yeah, probably the most recent one. Before they changed the funding formula, there was a thing called a pension fund, and every school district could levy 30 cents per thousand on their local taxpayers to help pay for the South Dakota retirement for their teachers. They would put that into a fund and then use that to pay the teachers portion, or the school district's portion of that retirement. So the retirement fund takes 12%, 6% from the teacher salary, 6% from the board. So that 30 cents per thousand was in the board's fund, and they could use that again to pay that 6% of a teacher's salary so that when they do retire, they'll have 12% retirement. Anyhow, there were several schools, I think there was about a dozen, that weren't spending that money. They were putting it in a war chest and saving it. They were using their general fund to pay for the retirement, but they were saving this pension fund money for some other rainy day. And I know two school districts, one had $600,000, and that district had about 400 kids in the district, and they had $600,000 in savings. Another district I'm very familiar with had a little over $800,000 in their account, and yet they're opting out to the public for $800,000, and they've got that money already secured. Well, the legislature found out about that and said, whoa, these schools are hoarding money. Well, if they're hoarding money, we don't need to give them anymore. So what they did is they eliminated that fund, and that 30 cents on the per thousand went away. So basically 140 school districts suffered because 12 districts, around 12, I don't have the exact number, I'll say around a dozen, were using that fund the wrong way. And so that's one of the examples that near and dear to me anyhow.
You're seeking to represent District 17. Tell us a little bit about your district and some of the other key issues at play in that area.
Well, to be honest with you, I haven't studied that yet. I think the COVID virus has handicapped a lot of new-time legislators, or first-time legislators, trying to run in health, from getting out there and finding out what the issues are with the public. I did attend a meeting in Turner County with a group of Democrats. One of the questions was one of the farmers asked me, well, how much do you know about farming? And I said, not as much as I need to, and that's why if an issue comes up, I'll probably be calling you and asking your opinion. And he kind of laughed and said, well, that's what we want. We want people to do that. So the issues, the burning issues, I have not been able to pinpoint exactly a burning issue. I did talk to a person who was involved in criminal justice. One of their concerns was that the violations of the open meetings law is a criminal offense. And so if a school board or a city council or county commissioners accidentally violated that, and it can happen, you know, three or four people being together at a basketball game or a football game, happen to be talking and someone mentions something about an upcoming vote and somebody else overhears that, they could accuse those people of having an unfair open meeting. Well, if that's proven, those people could be jailed and they're going to be heavily fined. So this person I was talking to is a law enforcement person, and he felt that we should decriminalize that law. If it's a violation, they should be fined, and any action taken at the board meeting should be voided, and the board would have to reconvene for any to reestablish any of those policies that have been set. But he really wanted to take the criminalization away from that. And I thought, well, that's not a bad idea. Again, is that something that can be changed? I don't know. But that's one of the local things that I was told would like us to look at.
My guest has been Al Lieber. He's running for the House of Representatives for District 17 as a Democrat. Al, we're out of time, but thanks so much for joining us today. Much appreciated.
Well, thank you very much.
Republican Tina Mullally of Rapid City is running for re-election to the South Dakota House of Representatives in District 35, where she is a small business owner. Last month, Mullally was assigned to the Committee for the Mental Health of First Responders Task Force.
Tina Mullally, thank you for visiting with us on In the Moment. Welcome.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
So tell us about this task force for first responders.
Well, it was brought along from the legislature, and I'm honored to be asked to serve on this interim task force. And there are several other legislators, Representative Milstead, Representative Schwach, Representative St. John, Barthel, Sigmund, and Senator Heinert and Senator Smith. And then there are several non-legislators that come from all across the state, from the Sheriff's Department, EMTs, firefighters, the police departments, dispatchers, psychiatrists, psychologists, and even the spouses of some of the first responders. And this task force has been assembled to better understand and recommend solutions to the mental health of our first responders. It's to recognize if there is a problem and to evaluate any of the effect to the public and how it affects retention of employees to the first responders and the recruitment of, with possibly eliminating the not needing help stigma associated with seeking assistance from any injuries, either physical or emotional, that are becoming a growing concern among our first responders and their families.
Has the task force met just yet, or is that still to come?
We haven't had our first meeting for official, but we did have our first meeting to select the non-legislators that are going to be joining us.
Mm-hmm. Tell us, you're running for District 35. You already represent District 35. What are some of the other key issues that are top of mind for you in the district you represent?
Well, I'm the type of candidate that listens to her constituents, and I try to address their issues. I have a couple of that have brought it to my attention, thinking the need of reducing the 4th of July celebration from 12 days to 5 days. And in talking with other constituents and different legislators, and that wasn't going to come about. So in talking with the constituent, I eased his concerns, you know, and found other solutions to it. Hmm. I have another constituent that is concerned about property taxes. And of course, I think we all are on that. I'm definitely for limited government and lower taxes for the working class. You know, it's amazing how much money comes out of our pocket. And we're just trying to live and raise a family and be happy and healthy.
I recall in this past legislative session, you were the prime sponsor of a bill that would allow families to install cameras in the rooms of nursing homes. And if I'm remembering correctly, that was also something that was brought to you by a constituent. And of course, at that time, we couldn't have known the role that the pandemic would play in whether or not we're able to visit our relatives in nursing homes and long-term care facilities. Do you have an update on how that now law has rolled out, or have you heard from families after this bill has passed?
I did hear from the constituent that actually brought that forward, and they were so grateful because they were able to put a video camera in for their family, and because of the pandemic, it was even a second blessing because they were able to visit with their family member at that time. Because the family member did not have access to a computer at that time, and the camera really helped.
If reelected, what are some other key issues that you would like to pursue in the next legislative session?
Well, I don't have an agenda of my own, things that I want to bring forward. I am going to be working on a bill that was brought in 2020 by Representative Tim Reed out of Brookings to address landlords and tenants' rights. There are some issues with the wording on the statute that we have now. The statute we have now is very outdated, I guess, because some of the language is still you can hire a room, and I don't think anyone has ever hired a room in the last 50 years. So some of the language just needs to be cleaned up, and I have several constituents, especially because my district reaches up into North Rapid, where many of the hotels are, and we want to make sure that the Airbnbs are addressed as well in this landlord-tenant. So that's something that I'm going to be looking forward to.
Tell us about why you want to run for re-election and your goals for representing your district. What inspires you to be a representative?
Well, I'm a different kind of legislator. I'm one that didn't really want the job, but I'm an obedient servant of my Lord Jesus Christ. And I argued with the Lord for about 2 years, telling him I'm not a politician. And he said, I know, but you're a statesman and I need you there. And so I said, if that's where you need me, I will be obedient. You are the engine on this train, and I will be the caboose and do what I need to do. And the citizens of District 35 felt that my message of limited government, limited taxes, less regulations was something that they really wanted to be represented And so in running for reelection, that again is my goal, is to fulfill what it means to have the American dream in the state of South Dakota by being able to start a business and make your own way in the world.
I want to circle back to where we started in this segment, talking about the task force related to mental health for first responders. Tell us a little bit maybe about the origins of that task force and the goals.
Well, we do need to find if there are any gaps in the care and recovery times, and if workman's compensation is a viable solution. That was one of the reasons it was being brought up, especially in these days and times when our first responders are being targeted in many of our cities. Not so much in the state of South Dakota, which I am so thankful for, but they still have it in the back of their mind. And, you know, our first responders are just amazing individuals. Not many would run toward danger or into a burning building or to be the first on the scene of a motor vehicle accident. Mm-hmm. You know, as a society, relying on the quick response whenever the need arises, we must be ever vigilant to the effects of a career path that these individuals have chosen as a first responder. And my hats go off to them. I will support them 100%.
My guest has been Republican Tina Mullally. She's a representative in District 35 running for re-election this fall. Representative Mullally, thanks for joining us today, and thank you for your time.
Well, thank you for what you do. I greatly appreciate it, and you have a blessed day.
Erin Royer would like your vote for state representative in the South Dakota State Legislature. She feels that over the last few years, representation has not reflected the values and issues most important to those in District 12. Those issues include health care and education.
Erin, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Education and health care seem to be more pertinent issues than ever. At least more of us are thinking about them during a global pandemic and figuring out how to do back to school and remote learning and all kinds of things. Tell me a little bit about yourself, and then let's talk about some of those issues and how they reflect the needs of District 12 and the state of South Dakota. So first, a little bit about you, Erin.
I am a genetic counselor at a local hospital system, so I spend my days talking to people about how their genetics might be impacting their health. So I have sort of a dual role of education and working in healthcare, and then I have a background in some education roles in internships in college. So that's how those two became sort of big focuses for me personally, and then as I was talking to voters, those also were sort of the forefront of a lot of voters' minds. I'm a native of central Pennsylvania. I moved to South Dakota about 4 years ago and just fell in love with the state and with Sioux Falls.
Yeah. As a genetic counselor, I imagine one of the challenges is to explain complex scientific issues to people in a way that is useful for them and manageable for them, especially during some stressful times. So how do you think that skill of really interpreting science to people's individual lives would serve you in the State House?
That is an excellent question, and I think that is probably one of the skills that I have that will be the most applicable to public service, is taking complex ideas, whether those are science, policy, taxes, and making them make sense for the person that I'm talking to the audience that I'm talking to, sort of taking it and saying, how does this apply to me? So I think with my skill set, it'll be really a challenge, but a very worthwhile cause to help make sure that my constituents understand here are the choices and here's what we can do about it and how would we as a community like to move forward.
It's a difficult time to be a teacher as teachers think about their own health and the health of their families and the health of their students right now, but also not the highest paid in the nation. What are some of your hopes for, if you are elected to State House, to addressing teacher pay and some of the other issues that face teachers in the state of South Dakota? What would you like to do?
The first thing that I would like to do is really help South Dakota meet its obligation to teachers. We have passed laws and we have promised our teachers funding and pay that really haven't materialized. So I would really like to see our teachers' pay and benefits become more competitive with the rest of the country. And then in addition to giving teachers a compensation package that really, you know, helps them stay in our community, stay in our schools, I'd like to see schools get the resources that they need. So once the teachers get to school, they don't have to spend their own money on basic classroom supplies, and there's enough support resources in the school to help teachers be teachers and have the appropriate experts work with students on things like mental health concerns, health care, and nutrition, so that the teachers can do their best role and their best job, and the students still get the support that they need once they get to that school building.
You also mentioned the economy as an important issue to you. This is, again, a difficult year, and folks in January are going to have some tough choices to make, but we also had a surplus going into this next fiscal year, which was a surprise. Talk a little bit about some of your overall, you know, philosophy about what economic development, what does a strong economy look like in South Dakota, and what would you try to leverage to make it stronger?
A strong economy in South Dakota can be based on a lot of different things. We have a lot of incredible resources out here. We have agriculture. We have a very strong healthcare economy in our state. We have a very strong banking sector in our state. So I think we have a very diverse economy, and it's going to be something that's going to help us with recovery. I would like to see things that support the workforce, because our economy really runs on people. So it'll be important to make sure we're supporting our workforce, supporting our people to have the training for the jobs that we need filled. So make sure that we're addressing skill sets and shortages, make sure that good education is available to people so that they can stay in our state, learn in our state, and then go on to work in our state.
Let's talk about healthcare a little bit and circle back to that, if you would. It seems like a challenging time, but also opportunities as we look at, you know, more telehealth, for example, in the state of South Dakota. Where do you see some of the challenges for the state regarding health, regarding access to healthcare, access to quality healthcare, and where are the platforms for jumping off and making it stronger?
One of the biggest things that I see in South Dakota that is a bit of a challenge that some of my patients face is just how far they have to travel for sometimes primary care services, but a lot of times you have to travel pretty impressive distances to get to specialty care. So if there's a certain type of doctor that you need to see for a heart or kidney disorder, you might have to travel well over an hour for that. I think telehealth is one of the things that we could use to help reduce those travel times. If it's an appointment that could take place via some sort of telehealth systems, but to be able to do that, we do need to make sure that we have a good communications infrastructure. We need good telephone service. We need good access to things like telephones and high-speed internet, not just for the healthcare facilities, but for our patients throughout the state. And I think those would be good places to start, making sure that South Dakotans have access to health care. It's not an unreasonable travel distance, especially with our harsh winters. It can be very difficult to make long drives when some of those snowstorms set in. And then in addition, I think that one of the biggest things we can leverage is we have some pretty impressive healthcare systems in our state that we can use as training sites to bring up the next generation of healthcare providers and show them, you know, South Dakota is a place to live, it's a place to work, and hope that they will stay in our communities and help address some of the healthcare provider shortages that really the entire nation are experiencing right now.
One more topic from your website that before I let you go, and that's about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And tell me a little bit about some of the, you know, the mindset that you would bring to peer about individual citizens' rights and how to protect them.
Absolutely. So personal freedoms is a big thing for me. Our founding fathers obviously thought it was a big thing. They put it in the Constitution. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness are the rights of every person. I think that the government, to the extent that it's able, should sort of stay out of people's way and let them live a life that's making them happy and safe and dignified, as long as it's not harming anyone else. So I would bring a mindset of, if we're going to limit somebody's rights, there has to be a good reason for that. Is the activity we're limiting a threat to somebody else's safety? Is it a threat to public safety? You know, I would be more on the stance of, we do not need more regulations of people's rights.
Aaron Royer is running for the South Dakota State Legislature from District 12. Aaron, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Democrat Linda Duba is running for re-election to the South Dakota House of Representatives. Her professional career includes working as an education assistant to the Sioux Falls School District. She believes in investing in education and better teacher pay, along with our seniors having quality nursing care. If re-elected, she would represent District 15. Now be sure to continue listening to the In the Moment podcast, where we will continue to introduce you to candidates vying for your vote across the state.
Linda, welcome to In the Moment. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Tell me a little bit about what do you think some of the top issues for the South Dakota State Legislature might be in a coming session.
We're going to have some challenges. We are definitely, from a healthcare perspective, rural health, we're getting battered right now. Our, you know, as you know, or you may not know, our major hospitals do a great job here, and I'm lucky enough to live in Sioux Falls, but they also have satellite offices across and clinics across the state of South Dakota. And during I don't even want to say the height of the pandemic, because it does continue here in South Dakota. We've had to pull in our horns and take away some of the services that we've been able to provide for our rural partners. And so as we come back online and we're doing our elective surgeries and the day-to-day care, we're going to see impact out there in the rural areas. Telehealth is going to be critical. And we as a state really need to take a serious look at who our uninsured are, our underinsured are, and how we maintain or even improve health care to all the citizens of South Dakota. I see that as one major opportunity. Education, obviously, you know, we came down to the very last day this year in terms of, were we or weren't we going to do our 2% increase to our teachers, which it's mandated by state statute. And we need to continue that to be able to support teacher pay, but more, not so much, it's keeping those teachers engaged in education here in South Dakota and not losing them to other states or other industries. So those are going to be two big challenges. And then we've got so many concerns with our roads, our bridges, and what's going on in rural South Dakota. You know, in Sioux Falls, we don't think of that as much, but agriculture is one of the lifebloods of this state, and we need to ensure that our infrastructure is strong and that our farmers can get their crops to market, but more importantly, that they have a place to market and that they have prices that can sustain those family farms. So looking at that and that it's hard when you are a state, but we're a rural state, and we need to apply pressure and find ways to maintain or increase our markets for our farmers. And we can do that through our congressional folks, but we also here in South Dakota need to reach out like many other rural states around us have done, looking for those opportunities for our farmers. Those are going to be three huge opportunities.
Is there an opportunity to use any of the CARES Act funding for a telehealth infrastructure or an education infrastructure for remote learning? Or are you, and maybe you can't answer this right now, but I guess how creative can the state legislature be with any, can the governor be with any of those funds to say, you know, we're in the process of shoring up some of this infrastructure, but the pandemic has shown us how drastic the need is, and we can apply some of that money to help us get there. Is that possible, or is that just not possible?
Yes, it is possible. It is possible,
go ahead.
And I really appreciate that question, because I've actually been looking into it and speaking with our school district here in Sioux Falls, but we'll be reaching out to others. Now, you know, if we have to go to a completely remote model, and we may end up back there, and let's hope not. But if we do, we've got to be able to provide broadband to our rural areas. You know, we don't have good coverage out there in some parts of our state. So we have set aside, and there are monies out there to improve that. But we need to ensure. But I think the bigger issue is for families who don't have access to the internet or broadband. You know, MIDCO stepped up this year for Sioux Falls students and offered internet services through June. I think we ended on June 30th, or maybe it's July 31st. So what do we need to do with that CARES Act money? We need to determine where are our citizens lacking the ability to get online. And we need to take a look at their instance or their situations. We've got people who've lost their jobs. Cable is going to be the first thing in internet to go. I mean, that's not an essential if you're trying to put food on the table. Or for those families that just can't afford it. We can take that money from a CARES Act perspective, and if we've got to provide remote education, we need to pay for that. And we need to ensure that we can fund, that we lay down more, I hate to use the word cable because, you know, we think of these big, but it's fiber optics and cable in those remote areas that can bring telehealth and can bring education and can bring the world to those families. We have problems right here in Minnehaha and Lincoln County. When I talked to one of my Representative Otten down there, and he says that his coverage is terrible. You know, and people find that shocking, but he's not altogether wrong. So can we use that CARES money? Yes, we can, because as a result of the pandemic, we now need to do things differently.
The Argus Leader recently did an interview with Dr. Kevin Post, who's been on this show from Avera many times, and he was really talking about the reduced death rate over the months from the pandemic. And one of the things he cited that healthcare providers have learned since January is how to leverage telehealth. And it occurs to me that, again, in Sioux Falls or in a bigger city in some areas, that is a really easy connection that you don't even end up going to your doctor. The nurses are doing telehealth at home. The mental health services that have been provided during telehealth, but for much of the state, that's just not an option. And that could be a difference between life or death.
It is a life or death situation in many cases. Now, I worked on the telehealth mental health task force last summer, and we're going to be having our first meeting again here on August 4th. We're going to continue work on mental health services, behavioral health. Telehealth has been a cornerstone of that. Imagine being in rural South Dakota. You're a farmer. You're seeing your crop prices drop out of the sky. You experience major flooding, and all hope is lost. What do you need? You need to be able to speak to, and not just over the phone, connect with that mental health professional, that provider. And so telehealth is critical to our state. It's critical in the sense that, we need to be able to deliver mental health services and behavioral health in our schools for our children. I mean, I work at Laura B. Anderson. She has wonderful staff over there, and we've got, you know, social workers and counselors, but we still have students who suffer from adverse childhood experiences. We call them ACEs. And the benefits that we could bring to those children during the school day by allowing for that mental health professional to speak to a student in private during the school day via telehealth. We're doing some pilots in some rural areas, but this is something that we need to expand upon across the state. I can't stress it enough.
Yeah. Linda Duba is a Democrat running for re-election as a state representative. Linda, thank you so much for being here with us. We appreciate your time.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate your time. Have a great afternoon.
Now that's the show for this week. Thank you for joining us. Again, if you're looking for an individual segment from our radio program, you can find all of our segments at listen.sdpb.org or by following the In the Moment Segments podcast. And if you have a story idea, send an email to inthemoment@sdpb.org. For Lori Walsh and Chris Loffrey, I'm Josh Heyer. Thank you for listening.